You are listening to the Friends of Fantasy Benefits Baseball Podcast. We will be coming to you each and every day with uncensored, in-depth analysis of everything you need to know to win your fantasy leagues this season. You can follow us on Twitter, at Fantasy Benefits, or join the Facebook discussion groups, www.facebook.com/groups/Friends of Fantasy Benefits. Give us a 5-star review on iTunes and send us a copy or screenshot of it to friendsoffantasybenefits@gmail.com or on Twitter at Fantasy Benefits for a chance to get into one of our listener leagues or other prizes. Enjoy the show. Are friends with fantasy benefits.
Mike, how hard are you right now?
Oh man, I've been hard since you said hi, welcome to Friends with Fantasy Benefits podcast.
You guys have posters of him in your room and you just like
not yet. I think I'd go to jail if I put a poster of a 17-year-old in my room. But
we are friends with fantasy benefits.
I didn't take a selfie. I don't know what happened. You guys saw a Facebook status and ran with it.
We are friends with fantasy benefits.
After the Super Bowl, it's kind of like this awful period where I have no drugs and I'm cutting everything off cold turkey. And I,
we are friends with fantasy benefits.
Hello and welcome in to another episode of the Friends with Fantasy Benefits Baseball Podcast. I'm your host, Mike Werner, and as usual on Thursday, our prospect day, we have our lead prospect analyst, Matt Thompson. Matt, how's it going, buddy?
Good, man. These prospect shows are becoming my favorite show to do, and we have good news to report. Andy's not dead.
Andy is actually here with us. Andy, how was your, Snapchat or little photo in front of the train last week? How'd that go?
So actually, I didn't take a selfie. I don't know what happened. You guys saw a Facebook status and ran with it.
It was definitely Matt. 100%.
if you follow me on Twitter at AA Anderson FWFB, you would have found out that I'm totally fine. The train conductor was talking about some other idiot, not me. And I ran with it.
Well, I think we're all happy that you're okay, especially me, because me just doing a show with Matt by myself would probably be a horror
show. That's real bad, yeah. That's real
bad. Oh, come on, man.
I'm just kidding. But this is episode 230 of the podcast. I just got to ask you guys, how pumped are you that we're actually watching some live baseball right now? And in particular, a lot of prospects as well, because a lot of guys, are invited to big league camp to see how things are going to go and just get a few at-bats or innings in. And it's been really fun to watch a lot of the guys that we've already mentioned on this podcast just get some MLB exposure, kind of dip their toe in the waters a bit. But I'm really excited about just spring training in general. I know it's not the most glamorous baseball ever, but it's nice to get some repetitions under our belt before the season starts. So,
yeah, it's always fun watching some of these prospects. Man, today I happened to catch Francis Martes throwing an inning today against the Marlins. Okay, the stuff looks great. The fastball and the slider look good. He only threw one inning, so I didn't really see many other offerings, but throws hard, which we knew that. The delivery is still kind of... It throws you for a loop a little because it's not conventional, but it works.
Eric Lagopagan was a little bit down on him when he spoke with Paul Spohr on their last Sleeper in the Bus show. He kind of gave a quick mention about Martes, and he wasn't really in love with him. He did love the slider, but I think everybody and their mom loves the slider for Martes. But everybody also loved the slider for Luis Severino, and he really had. Although Severino has looked great this spring. It hasn't been a bunch of innings or anything, but in limited exposure, that changeup is looking a lot better. If you guys are looking at just regular season-long fantasy or keeper leagues, Severino's looking good. But
a lot of that stuff. Tyler Glasnow looks good, too.
He did. And I know everybody was all bragging about Michael Kopech and the fact that he was sitting 100, which I'm not going to try and tone that down. I think that it's amazing that he's sitting 100 miles an hour. But he did get tagged. So at the end of the day, it kind of shows you that velocity doesn't matter. It's always about command and location. But any spring training stories so far, Andy, that you want to just belch out, or do you want to get things started?
Well, I just want to say it's so nice to be watching baseball again. After the Super Bowl, it's kind of like this awful period where I have no drugs and I'm cutting everything off cold turkey, and I'm addicted to baseball, but it's not around the corner. So, but I'm real happy to be back in the business.
Yeah, exciting time. So let's, first and foremost, please rate and review the show. We really appreciate it. If you take a screenshot of a 5-star review, you can send it to any of us. Our Twitter handles are, I know you already said yours, Andy. Matt is at MDTomp24, or FWFB, I always think 24. And mine's
used to be RIP.
Yeah, RIP to that one. And mine is at Mike Warner, FWFB. You can send it to any of us, and we'll get you in a listener league. I think we're going to start a second one if we can get that going and get enough participants. Or we might send you some gear, possibly. Justin has some extra Friends with Fantasy Benefits gear from our last little shipment that we got. So, you know, he might be willing to give some of that gear out if you give us a 5-star review. You can also send him the review if you would like, at Justin Mason, FWFB. And, yes, continue to rate and review the show. It's really been helping us out. Again, this is episode 230, and let's get started. We're going to continue our series. We've gone through our top 10 list for what catcher, first base, second, and short. Now we are on third base. We're going to go through our top 10 list as usual, and we're going to also give some honorable mentions.
Real quick, guys, if you have one word to sum up what you think about ranking third baseman, what is it?
You can start.
One.
I want to use two. It's fucked up.
For me, because it was mind-numbing. I'll use two words, too.
That's hyphenated. That's cheating.
I'll follow the rules, and I'll say uninspiring. I'll stick to one.
There you go.
Yeah. So, all right, well, let's go through our number ones. The one name that's not uninspiring on this list is absolutely Vladimir Guerrero Jr., and this might not be popular, and I get if you are the type of guy that likes to take safety, I understand not going with somebody like Vlad Guerrero up top, but the dude is going to be 18 this year. He's already 6'1 and 200 pounds. He has incredible bat speed and has plus raw projected power. The speed is good enough for double-digit stolen bases. His dad had multiple years of 30-30 seasons. He almost had a 40-40 season at some point, and by all accounts, Vlad Guerrero Jr. is just every bit as good as his father was. For fantasy purposes alone, Vlad Guerrero Jr. is the top third base prospect for me. It's honestly not close, if I'm being completely honest here. It's not close, and the upside is just so immense that I can't really pass him up here at number one. So that's my reasoning going with him at the top spot. Andy, who do you have at number one?
So basically everything you just said there was prefacing me sounding like a total utter idiot. But I will say this, though. I remember going to Yankee games when Vlad Guerrero Jr. was on the on the Expos, and he was throwing the ball from the first baseline into the stands on the left field side. It was unreal watching that arm play. And I think his son has got the same exact thing, but he actually is not my number one. He's my number two. And the only reason that Devers is my number one is because of the proximity. Oh, 20 years old, two more years. I don't think he's going to play at all this year, but he is 2 years older, a little bit more experience in the game, and has good experience too. So that's why Devers is my number one.
That's interesting.
But it is very close.
I like that you're mixing it up there, because Devers has actually lost a lot of helium from last year to now based on how he started in 2016. But I like that you're going with Devers, because I love him too, and we'll get to him in length here pretty soon. But Matt, I know who your number one guy is. I'm pretty sure it's the same as me. You have him ranked as such on your top 200, but give us some more kind of insight on Vlad Guerrero Jr. and whether you think he sticks at third base.
Yeah, man. I got Guerrero Jr. as my 15th prospect overall, which might sound a little crazy to you, to some people that he's 17, but I'm an upside whore. And
it's
this,
fantasy. It's fantasy baseball. At the end of the day, it's fantasy baseball.
Yeah, you got to have a little fun.
Yeah, right? And, you know, Baseball America, the best publication out there for minor league prospects. If you don't subscribe, please go do it. Their Blue Jays list. I'm not going to give too much information away because it is a paid website, but they put a 70-hit tool on Guerrero. And they put a 70 power on Guerrero, and they comped him to Edwin Encarnacion. That is incredible praise.
You know, also can't drink for three more years.
Yeah, and that's he'll be playing in the major leagues before he can drink, and that's very rare nowadays. You see, even with now how deep people dive into prospects, it's very rare you see someone come up before they're 21, and that's 100% what's going to happen here with Guerrero. You got to look at this. The numbers last year don't jump off the page if you look at them just as take them for what they are. But if you look at the context of it, he's at 17 years old, and despite being 3.5 years younger than the average Appy League player, Guerrero slashed .271, .359, .449 with 8 homers, 12 doubles, 3 triples, and a surprising amount of steals and 15 stolen bases in 60 games. 122 WRC plus. So that puts a good idea of what he was doing despite being 3.5 years younger than the average person in the league. He's born in Canada via the Dominican Republic. The Blue Jays gave him $3.9 million. The one knock on Guerrero, if there is one, is that he's not going to play third base, but who cares? Because his bat is so freaking good, it doesn't matter. You can put him at first base, he's going to carry you. He's going to be a top three round pick during his peak, if not higher than that, and in all dynasty formats, whatever you play in. It was an interesting thing with Guerrero is when he signed, the Jays were so focused on the bat, they kind of did what the Red Sox did with Moncada and let him pick where he wanted to play. So he wanted to play third. They said, okay, you're going to play third, get comfortable, just hit, and we'll find your defensive home later. And I love that approach. That's confidence. You know what you're getting there. You have to love this from a fantasy realm. He's 17 years old, but he's number 1 on a fantasy list. And I can't remember the last time I ranked someone that high that young. So, man, this is crazy.
Yeah, I've seen a good amount of video on Vlad, and it's remarkable, especially
the swing is a carbon copy of his father. The swing is a carbon copy, and he's a little thicker. He's not as athletic, doesn't have the arm, but who does? It's still a great arm. And there's little whispers he improved in defense. He might be able to stick it at the third. He might be kind of do what Encarnacion did and play third for like 2 or 3 years, then shift over to first and DH. And anything, like I said, it doesn't matter where you play this guy because he's so good. But if he can stick a third, that's even more gravy on this guy's plate, man. It's nuts.
The home ballpark is also great. Rogers Center is one of the premier places to hit home runs. And obviously, that's going to help his value. I did mention that Vlad Guerrero Sr. had 30-30 and 40-40 potential seasons. I don't think Guerrero Jr. is the type of guy that's going to steal 30 or 40 bases, but it wouldn't surprise me if he had a 40-20 year or a 45-20 year, you know, something like that. And he's going to hit for batting average as well. I think we've really, you know, touched on Vlad Guerrero Jr. enough, but the fact that
he's going to say, it's awesome. Do you guys have posters of him in your room and you just like,
not yet. I think I'd go to jail if I put a poster of a 17-year-old in my room, but that might be me.
Yeah, mine's on my wall and I didn't even use glue or any type of tape to put it up there.
I just use my imagination. That's fine. One thing I will note, Mike, you touched on it though. Don't get excited about the steals. You did a good job of covering that. That just shows you how advanced he is. At 3.5 years younger, he's still stealing 15 stolen bases in 62 games, and he's not known for his speed. Yeah. So
his dad stole a ton of bases especially for how big he was, but he got caught a ton as well. And we saw that with Junior last year. He got caught 5 times, even though he stole 15 bases. So I don't think it's going to be for lack of trying for Guerrero Jr. I think he will try and steal bases. It's just more that he's not a burner out there. He's somebody that's going to be competent enough on the base pass to give you some extra value in fantasy, but it's not going to be something that you are going to be penciling in every single year for him. All right, let's go to number 2. Andy, who do you have? Oh, wait, yeah, Devers at number 2. Or no,
I have Devers at 1 and Junior at 2, actually.
Who do you have at 2, Matt?
Nick Senzel.
I also have Nick Senzel there. I can promise everybody one thing. I will never be able to keep all 3 of our lists straight any episode that we do this. So
it's all good. It's what makes it fun. It's raw.
Uncut, unscripted. Yeah.
Unscripted.
Where do you have Senzel, Andy?
Number 3. So let's go ahead and talk about him.
So let's have a little discussion about him. So Andy, what do you think about Nick Senzel? Since you have him at number 3 and you're technically the lowest on him, is there any worries for you in his profile? Is there anything in particular that you just don't like about Senzel? Or do you just think that the upside isn't as high as Devers or Vlad Jr.?
No, I think that he's, in any other year without these two guys, he's also number 1. But because we have Devers and VG, DJG. We have to put him at number three. But he's a special kid. You know, he was the best college player in 2016 draft, at least in my opinion, for hitter. He will stick at third base, which is different than pretty much everyone else on this list, it seems. But I think a special note about Senzel is right after him, it gets real bad. After him, the talent just drops off this nice little peak. But Senzel, there's a lot to like about him. They brought him up quickly through rookie to A. I don't think he starts this year in AA. I think he stays in A. But he has a really good hit tool. Should hit for average. Good defensively, so he will stick at third. But other than that, just kind of a middle of the pack good third baseman.
What are your thoughts, Matt?
I do agree with a lot of what Andy said. The thing with Senzel that ranks him so high and makes him the likely number one pick in supplemental drafts for Dynasty League now that Kyle Lewis destroyed his knee is the safety factor. Senzel isn't going to blow your doors off with the ceiling. I have him down a guy that's going to threaten to hit 290 with 20 or so homers, 10-12 yeah. steals with good on base skills. I guess to put a comp on that, it's Anthony Rendon with hopefully health, obviously, knock on wood for that. Anthony Rendon with more speed. That's a good player, not a great player. Kind of, you can even make an argument that he might be Alex Bregman light from the power department. But he's more safe than anything. He's going to stick at third. He's got a plus arm for the position. The safety is worth a lot here. The Reds popped him number two. Like I said, he's probably number one now in your draft. Plus hit tool, above average thump, above average speed. Nothing really not to like here. The organization with the Reds, nobody's blocking him there. Clear path to playing time. It's just a matter of if he fits in with their timetable. And right now they're trying to lose. So I don't expect to see Senzel to the end of next season. But you can't go wrong here. Safety is worth a lot in fantasy formats. So take Senzel.
Nobody's blocking him. They have Eugenio Suarez and Alex Blandino. What are you talking about? I don't know who told you
who?
About those two. Exactly. Those guys are rocks. But my thing about Senzel is this.
Really small rocks.
Yeah, really small rocks that can move really easily. They can
really
skip
small
across
rocks
the
are still rocks, though. Really small rocks are still rocks. Don't you forget that.
Oh, boy. Anyways, what I like about Senzel is that he's very mature. I watched him a good amount at UT over here. He's got a good work ethic. He makes adjustments very well. And the proximity is great. So I had to kind of mitigate my risk a little bit after throwing Flacco Jr. number one. I felt like I needed to add a little bit of safety to the list. And I went with Senzel at two. But certainly not because of upside. I was half tempted to throw Rafael Devers at number two based on fantasy upside alone. But I do think Senzel is very safe, like you already mentioned, Matt. The power, I think, is going to be about 20, but it could be boosted by the Great American Ballpark. It's an amazing place to hit. It could be upwards of 25 or so. I don't think it's much higher than that. And I think that you'll know fairly early in Senzel's career what his skill set for fantasy is. And then I think there will be an opportunity to trade him, actually. Because, believe it or not, I think that his career trajectory is more so that he's going to improve really fast. And then it's going to kind of be a slow downward trend. So if it's me as a fantasy owner, especially like right now in, you know, restart dynasty leagues, or if I'm kind of doing my draft after having a dynasty team for a while or whatever, we're doing our first year player draft or whatever, then I would take Senzel very early, and then I would try and trade him once he makes the major leagues, because I do think he's going to adjust very quickly. He's going to be solid as soon as he gets up there because he is advanced enough to do so. But I just think long term he's going to end up kind of going downward a bit, and we're going to kind of see him plateau in terms of his production, and he doesn't excite me much. I do think that Bregman and Rendon are decent comps to him, but I don't find him to be that athletic either. I think he's a little bit thicker, a little stockier. I know he's about 200 pounds right now. I think he could add a little bit more weight too, and not good weight, as he gets older as well. So I think the steals could certainly go down, and I don't think the power will necessarily uptick either. So overall, I am high on Senzel. I have him at number two, and I think he's a very safe option to make the major leagues, but I don't think long term I would have him above somebody like Devers underneath him.
Let's do a little pivot off this really quickly. First year player draft rankings, for your dynasty formats. We're in the middle of one right now, Mike. Andy, also, I'm asking you this too. Where do you, Senzel, Kyle Lewis, Mickey Moniak, are those your top three guys?
I would take Zinsel first just because of his safety and proximity right now.
Okay. Yeah, I agree with that.
And I could probably get a nice trade once he makes the major league. Like, he can make the major leagues within this season, at the end of this season, possibly even. I don't think that will happen, but he could. And if he does, then he's automatically there, and his role is already defined. You can trade that easily. That's a really good piece to have on your team that you can trade. Kyle Lewis isn't going to make the major leagues for at least 2 years now, probably more in the three range.
Yeah.
And Mickey Moniot's a project.
Yeah, I guess I left Corey Ray out too. I should include him. I know you don't like him, Mike, but
I love his long, but he's another guy kind of like Senzel, who I think is very, very has a very good likelihood of making the major leagues, but I just don't think we'll have a long term career that provides a ton of upside. But I keep blabbering.
Really,
what about you, Andy? What do you feel about this?
Well, I agree. I take Senzel just proximity based alone. I got to keep harping on this because this is what I brought up in my first podcast, and it's honestly how I rate guys, especially young kids in bad systems in bad teams like the Reds. I also agree. I don't think he plays this year. There's no reason to start his clock so early, but I think he is legit. I think he is the third baseman. I really like the comp to Bregman without power. I think that makes sense. And another thing that I'm looking at now, we mentioned two podcasts ago about guys that have ton of extra base hits over hits in the season, and 33 extra base hits over 69 hits last year. Those are good numbers. I like those numbers. So I definitely believe that for his age, where he is on the team he is, as his hit tool is great, I think Senzel is my number one guy at least in that list that you mentioned.
Yeah, you should just take Kevin Maiton and throw the rest out.
Yeah, I left him out on purpose because, you know, I've tried to stick to draft guys, but you can't go wrong with that either.
Right.
Anyways, where were we even with Senzel? We just started going off into this tangent.
I think we covered him. I mean, we're on number three guys now. I mean,
yeah, and I have Devers. You already said you have Senzel, Andy. So let's dive into Devers a little bit more, since Andy kind of already gave his stance on him. Matt,
Devers is my number. He's my number three as well.
I figured. So let's give a little bit of a Devers outlook, and then we'll kind of move on after that. So give us some Devers stuff.
Yeah, real quick on my top 100, I had top 200. I had Guerrero 15, Senzel 20, and Devers 24. There's a massive gap between Devers and the next guy on this list. So this is kind of the top tier guys.
Yeah.
I'm skeptical of Devers sticks at third long term, but it's worth noting he did improve a lot defensively this year, according to some reports, and there's a chance that he's able to stick there, which is huge for his value. He got off to a really slow start, but he ended up finishing down the stretch with a 282, 335, 443 line, 11 homers, and 18 steals. Don't get excited about the steals. It's more because he's a smart baseball acumen. He's not a speed guy whatsoever, especially after he fills out. Plus bat-to-bat skills. We talk about contact rate all the time, Mike, for a bigger, huskier dude, I'll say. That's his projection anyways. He makes really good bat-to-ball skills, future plus power. Might get too big for third, which kind of would slow him down. Like I said, might move to first, which puts more pressure on the bat. And Boston kind of has an opening at first base, oddly enough, and third, really. So it won't be for probably till the end of next year, same timetable as Senzel. But I think Devers can put strong batting averages up, probably in the 280 range, 270, 280, 20, 25 homers at peak, not accounting for Fenway. He's going to have a lot of doubles. He's got that kind of stroke. OBPs are going to be a little bit limited because he is an aggressive hitter. He'll hit his pitch. And like I said, don't count on those steals. I think they're more just being advanced for his age.
Remind me, wasn't there a Dominican player, lefty, kind of bigger, husky, played in Boston, had like amazing numbers? No?
A Cuban one? I think you're wrong. I think you're real wrong there.
The one that took PEDs for years and never got caught.
The one that constantly loved to look Chris Archer in the eyes whenever he hit a home run off him and then bat flip, and it would drive Chris Archer absolutely nuts. You know, he would 100% fight him. He wouldn't win, but he would fight.
Baseball is a better place without Big Poppy. I'll just say that.
This is my thing here. I think that Devers is the long-term replacement at first base. And when I mean long-term, I mean here in the next couple of years when Hanley Ramirez is not able to play the position or whatever, and Mitch Moreland's gone, blah, blah, blah. But I do think Devers is the future first baseman. So we have him on the third base list. He is getting a little bit better at third base, but I think long-term he is going to be a first baseman. What I love about him is he has an 81% contact rate at every stop in the minor leagues thus far, and he's hit 282 or better at every level. He's a natural hitter. You already mentioned that, Matt, with the bat-to-ball skills. He certainly shows that every single year thus far. And I think his home run ceiling is somewhere above 30. Once he kind of gets that pull power down, I think that he can definitely hit upwards of 30, 35 bombs. He's going to be playing in really good parks in the American League. I don't think that Dave Dombrowski is going to trade Devers. He had the opportunity multiple times in the offseason and last year to do so, and he never did. I think that they are going to stand by him all the way up until he hits the major leagues. And you know, while he doesn't walk a ton, he has really good recognition of the strike zone, and I just think it's going to work out for him. Like you already mentioned, Matt, as well, the 18 bases that he stole last year in Salem, that's not going to be consistent with his profile, but I do think he will certainly be able to steal a few at the early part of his career. He's not 200 pounds yet. He will get there. So as he develops into his frame a little bit more, you will see more power come, and I think that he's going to be a stud. If somebody puts Devers in front of Senzel, I have absolutely no problem doing that. With you putting him at number one, Andy, I have no problem with that either, because a lot of things can happen with Vlad Guerrero Jr. between now and whenever he gets promoted. I mean, we have a long – it's kind of the same argument you would make with Brendan Rodgers at number one versus Dansby Swanson. I think that that's very comparable here between like Nick Senzel and Vlad Jr., because you have the high upside player versus the guy that's safe. Right. And Senzel isn't as safe as Swanson, because Swanson's already going to be in the big league team now. But I think it's very comparable here that you have a high risk, high upside guy in Vlad Guerrero up top, and somebody like Senzel number two or in that proximity. And then somebody like Devers, who's right in the middle. He's not that safe, but he's also not risky either, in my opinion. He's kind of right in the middle there. It's a pretty sweet spot for him. But I do think he's more safe than he is risky at this point.
Well, just my opinion again on Devers. I think that actually it's a show of big confidence that the Red Sox organization said, okay, we're fine trading Moncada. Like, that's a cool thing we can do if we can get Sale, because we've got Devers down there. And I think that's an enormous show of confidence. I like Devers a lot. I think that that comparable, we could see sort of Evan Longoria-esque numbers before he traded average for home runs. But I do agree. I think Devers is a 280, 285 with 30, 35 home runs easy in the bank.
Yeah, and before I really start saying something bad, I want to say to all the Red Sox fans that listen to us, I have nothing against you personally. Anybody that likes the Red Sox, I have nothing against you. I just, you know, I'm a Rays fan, and I'm going to always smash the Red Sox whenever I can. It's absolutely ludicrous that they were able to get rid of Manny Margot, Anderson Espinosa, Yoan Moncada, Michael Kopech, all of these prospects, yet they still have guys like Benintendi, Devers. They drafted Jason Groom, much to my chagrin. They have guys like Sam Travis. They also have, you know, another player that I'm going to talk about later, Bobby Dalbec down there. Like, yeah. They still have a stacked farm system, despite the fact that they traded away, four or five of their top 10 guys last year or in the offseason.
You know what's funny, though? The guys responsible for acquiring all those young players, Ben Charrington, the guy they all wanted to run out of town with pitchforks, and his front office, and Mike Hazen, the guy that just left for Arizona. Now it's all Dombrowski, and you see where the Tigers are now, right?
And that's true. I mean, and then I think that will take effect in a few years, but at least for I really respect the Red Sox player development program, and I really take notice when some of their high-level prospects just are starting to pave a way for them to get regular playing time in the MLB, and I think Devers is just in that trajectory. I've always loved him. I'm going to say that. Like, I've always had just stars in my eyes for somebody like Rafael Devers. I'm still pissed off that somebody in our Friends with Fantasy Benefits Dynasty like took him literally like three picks before I was able to get him last year in our draft. But I do think in the long run, he's going to be a player that has a long career, hits for a ton of power, hits for good average, and isn't Dave Ortiz, but I think will be very close in terms of their raw projection.
Well, let's not also forget that the Red Sox have screwed up a couple prospects too.
Oh, sure.
They spent $60 million on Ruzny Castillo.
Oh, and that guy is a joke. He's an absolute joke.
They screwed up Ticini, which I was really upset about.
And I think the next pitching prospect they develop will be their first one. So
yeah, and maybe this is bad on me too, but I Dominicans are just better at baseball than everybody, in my opinion. I feel like Dominican-born players are the best natural ball players in the world. And
let's wait until a Guatemalan gets signed, and then we can have this discussion.
But that's just part of it with Devers. Like, I think that I'm not saying that just because Devers is Dominican that he's going to work out, but the fact that he is Dominican certainly gives him a bump up, in my opinion, because
the good type of racism.
Not the bad.
I agree.
I know I'm hitting some really tough waters here, but, and I'm not trying to make it that way. All of your
Venezuelan fans just ran out of town with pitchforks and torches.
I'm just saying, watch the World Baseball Classic this year and tell me the Dominican Republic, even without all their studs, doesn't make a really good run at it.
Well, I mean, yeah, they will.
All right. Let's go to number four before I really get in trouble.
This is number four. I'm very interested to see what this is.
I think the rest of the list is going to be a lot different for all of us. So I'm really kind of excited to get to the rest of the list here. Andy, who do you have at number four?
I have another Dominican, Jaimer Candelario.
Okay.
I like this kid. I like the Cubs system. Whatever they do, Theo and Joe, they do great jobs with their kids. He's got a long time to go before he comes up, and that's okay. Like, let him stay down. Let him get a little older than he is at 23. He will probably move to outfield, but he's got great plate discipline. He's an okay defender, but like I said, he'll probably move to outfield. But the thing to really like is the power and the batting average. It's safe. It's good. But again, where is he going to play? I have no idea. Not the Cubs, though.
You might not be waiting that long. He did get a cup of coffee last year. It was a very small amount, but he did make the majors at one point last year. He got a little taste of the major leagues, at least. So that's good to see with Candelario. I have him as borderline honorable mention because there's a guy on this list that I didn't know if we were going to recognize as a third baseman or a first baseman. So he's kind of right on that borderline for me. Mm-hmm. Matt, do you have Candelario on your list or anywhere at all?
I do. He's 10th. I actually like him, despite that 10th ranking.
So do I.
The thing with me here, though, is it's kind of the same reason why every upper-level Cubs prospect for me does get dinged a little bit is there's no path to the major leagues for this guy. He's playing behind Chris Bryant. That might be the worst spot to be. I think Chris Bryant and him are roughly the same age. And Candelario's no slouch. If he gets traded to a team like Oakland, say, for example, he would be there. He'd be their everyday third baseman probably right now, and he'd be batting fifth or sixth in the lineup. The on-base percentage skills are there. The hit tool is probably slightly above average. The power is average itself. He's a really good he's an average defensive player. He's like your average across the board at everything third baseman, but he's a switch hitter. So that's a nice little added bonus, but someone needs to free Candelario, and I don't know if the Cubs can probably get send Candelario over to the A's in a package for like Sonny Gray or something maybe, but I mean Candelario can't be the headliner, but he can be something like a Candelario and a Hap for Gray and a reliever. That sounds good to me, doesn't it?
Yeah, I think he gets traded at some point.
He has to. Yeah.
If he doesn't, then you're pretty much relying on some type of injury for him to get playing time, and none of us want to hope for injury. You know, I like the profile a lot. He has really, really good plate skills, and as everybody knows, I'm a plate skills whore. That's what I look for, and that's exactly what he exhibits. You know, I'm kind of looking through the third base rankings last year and what might be a good comparison. You know, Brandon Drury last year had 12 home runs, a 270 average. Or no, that's his projection. Last year he had 16 home runs, 280 average, you know, 50-50 in runs and RBIs. That's close, and that was the 25th third baseman. You know, in that realm, I think is what you can expect from somebody like Candelario. I think he just needs opportunity. So in NL only, I think that's where you would be looking at somebody like Candelario for this year.
You got to be scared, though, because if he gets traded, you don't know where he's going to go.
You don't, so. But at the same time, you know, he did get a brief stint last year in the majors. They brought him all the way up to AAA. He's close. He's there. He's an injury away, and that's something that is at least useful for deeper formats, you know. So that's why I have him on the borderline, is just because if he does stay with the Cubs, say he's with the Cubs 3 years from now, I can't say with certainty that he is a starting player for them.
Yeah, he's a future 20-homer bat with good OBPs, a strong average, a lot of doubles. So he's interesting, that's for sure. Just
last thing, his plate skills are extremely good. I mean, like, he had 70 walks and 99 strikeouts last year. Good.
Yeah, that's really good.
And another point to him maybe not being in or maybe staying in Chicago is that we've seen Joe Maddon likes to move guys around, make weird decisions. I don't know how many games Chris Bryant played in outfield last year, but he didn't need to do that. So we could very well see Candelario playing, you know, moving Jason Hayward to center field and playing Candelario in right field. Although I don't see that happening, but Schwarber goes down, maybe even Bryant or Baez goes down, and we will see Candelario up.
Sure. Yeah. So interesting player. We don't know the role yet, but it could make for a buying opportunity in deeper formats, because at the end of the day, we look for skills, not roles, and he does have some really good skills. So who is your number four, Matt?
I'll probably take some shit for this, but Matt Chapman of the A's.
Get out of here right now.
Are you serious?
Both have the same number four. And
oh, we did? Oh, nice.
let me be very clear here, because we are a fantasy podcast. We are not a regular, you know, baseball show. So if you're looking for a regular top 10 list, then go to Baseball America. Go read Eric Loggenhagen. I feel like we're plugging every single outlet, but
we should. They are good. Those are good sources.
Yeah,
so,
but we are strictly fantasy, and from a fantasy perspective, Matt Chapman has the goods. He hit 36 bombs last year between two levels. That was third in all the minor leagues. He continues to show the ability to walk. He had 11 and 12% walk rates in Double and Triple A last year. I mean, that's like Chris Carter, except for at third base.
Very good defensive player. That's
he is
his
very
best
good
skill.
Defensively, and he does strike out. He struck out 26 and 24% of the time in the lower minors. 34% at both stops last year. That equated to a 244 and 197 batting average in AAA. That's a problem. But I've watched him a lot this spring. I've actually watched every at-bat of Chapman, because he is a very intriguing guy to me. And what I love the most about him is that while he does have a lot of swing and miss to his game, when you try and throw to the outer half on Chapman, he doesn't try and turn on it. He goes straight the other way to right field, and it's not just some little slap. He can, you know, jolt that ball to right center or over the fence, and that's what I love the most. It's not just pull power. It's power to all fields, and it's legit. So that's why I have Chapman at four, because I feel like if he can get back down to what he was in the lower minors, 26, 24% in the strikeout rate, then you're looking at much more of like a 250 hitter, and that plays in fantasy. 250 batting average, 30 home runs, and then obviously decent run and RBI numbers. That's going to play. So that's why I got him at number four.
Yeah, I mean, I'm going to say echo a lot of what you said. And the Oakland A's actually do a really good job of getting power or production out of power guys. They kind of turned Ryan Healy into a decent hitter in the minor after not having much of a minor league track record. He was in the upper minors last year and took off for the A's, kind of where Chapman is now. I believe Chapman probably goes to AAA. It depends what they do with him and Renato Nunez. It's a weird situation for both of them.
Yeah,
kind
of
being
a lot of them. They got Healy at the same level. Nunez, they got Chapman. Yeah. They have a lot of options.
But the thing with Chapman is you nailed it, Mike. It's the strikeouts, and particularly it's the not hitting off-speed stuff. He struggles with off-speed stuff a lot. But if you throw him a fastball, you better watch out. 36 home runs. He gets a lot of strength and leverage, and that's where he gets the power from. I haven't seen the Statcast numbers. I don't know if they have them for the minor leaguers, but I'm sure they're high for him for every exit velocity, because he's a really got a really good base up there. It's just a strikeout issue, and it's just an issue with him is whether the hit tool is going to allow the other skills to manifest. So it's an odd situation being a guy that with a, what'd you say, 28% strikeout rate, 30% strikeout rate?
Well, yeah, last year it was worse. Last year it was 34% at both stops.
Yeah.
But at the early stages in the minor leagues, he was at 26 and 24%. Mind you,
that's playable.
He was a college product, but it was Cal State Fullerton, and usually they have some pretty solid guys coming out of there.
It's weird saying that with a guy with that many strikeouts has got some relative safety, but I think the the defense he brings to the table and the arm he brings to the table at third base are so good. They're gold glove caliber. And that's not an exaggeration. That's not hyperbole. That is what they are. With time, with a little bit more seasoning, he's definitely going to be in that conversation. And but that does add a little element of safety that he's going to stick at third base and get enough playing time to maybe work through some of the struggles. So I kind of put him there for this reason, and I, for some reason, I don't know why, I do trust the A's to maybe get something out of this kid. So Chapman at four, going to go on. I thought I was going on a limb, but I'm glad to see you right there with me, Mike. So
well, I can give you shit for it.
Go ahead.
Fire. Give us a
oh, man. I don't understand. Baseball HQ had him so high up, and I just totally disagree.
Don't knock Baseball HQ. I work for them. Calm down, I know,
but that's I love Baseball HQ. You should see my bookshelves are adorned with your books, but I cannot understand the infatuation with this kid. I mean, he's Mark
36
Reynolds.
36 homers, bro.
Mark Reynolds with defense. That's not great.
What is your problem with Mark Reynolds? That's the second time that you've brought up Mark Reynolds on the prospect show. And he was actually pretty decent for fantasy for a couple years.
He was. This is true. But I don't understand. Big league pitchers are smarter than AA and AAA pitchers. Inherently, they're going to be able to play something. You know, we're talking about Luis Severino improving his changeup. He comes against Luis Severino's slider, and he's going to look silly. I mean, he just can't hit breaking pitches. He can't hit changeups. It's just, yeah, I guess if every pitch you get is for a fastball and you wait for it, you could hit 35 home runs. But, you know, kids get eager. They start over-swinging. They swing out of their shoes. I just don't see him having this monstrous, you know, top of the clip third baseman that everyone else sees.
It's fair. Your points are very fair, but the one thing about prospects is they evolve and they don't. And we're going to find out.
How many times have you heard of a power swinger like this guy learning to hit a slider and then coming up and hitting 300?
Well, we're going to find out if this guy is more Mark Reynolds or if he's more Mike Holt. We're going to find out. The best part is we're going to find out this year. He's got the skill
That's
package.
True. I was going to say that he is coming up this year. So prepare those K's that Felix Hernandez can feel good about.
Prepare for glory.
Gosh. No? Yeah, right. I know what we're talking about. I just shook my head.
Who you have at number four, Andy? Or did we already go through that?
Because yeah, we already got me. Go ahead.
Sorry. Candelario. Yeah.
Anyways, let's go to number five. Andy, who you have at number five?
I have Lowe at number five.
Joshua okay. Lowe. Look at that. Who do you have at number five, Matt?
Lucas Erceg.
Wow. And I have Ryan McMahon at number five, not knowing whether we are counting him as a first or third baseman. So
yeah, we are.
For the exercise, we'll keep him at third. I want to hear some low action. Andy, I have him at number six. So, Matt, where do you have Joshua Lowe?
Lowe for me is number nine.
Jesus. Well, we're not going to go to you on this. So, Andy, why do you like Joshua Lowe?
So, I like him because he's sort of that sort of safe bet, but I wanted to preface this again. After Senzel, this list is going to be very, very different for everybody. And I was surprised, Matt, that you weren't higher on him because you're this bat speed whore. This kid has great bat speed.
I am.
Really, really good bat speed. The strikeouts are not good. We were talking about, what's his name? Chapman earlier. But I think this kid will make up for it. His batting average is going to be a lot better than Chapman's batting average. I've liked what I've seen so far. Again, he's only 18, so there's definitely going to be chances to grow. he's definitely going to stay at third base too because he's got good range and a good arm too.
Yeah, I like his swing a lot. He was obviously the first round pick for the Rays this last year, and he's a high schooler, so 100% he's not going to be up until probably 2020, maybe 2021, something like that. It's going to take time. So somebody like Joshua Lowe, I think the upside is definitely there. He has a really nice left-handed swing. I do think he will struggle to make contact against lefties, at least for a while, and he might not ever be able to hit lefties at a good clip. But you know, in 93 at-bats last year in the Rookie Gulf Coast League for the Rays, he had a 18% walk rate. I love that. And that's, you know, always kind of what I look at the first time that I look at prospects is the strikeout-to-walk ratio. He's obviously shown that he can take a walk. This is going to be a big year to see how he is developing and see where his career trajectory might take him. But I am very excited about Lowe. That's why I have him at six. And I think for fantasy purposes, the long-term upside could be that of a guy that hits 25-plus bombs, can steal a couple bases, and if things play right, he could hit at least 270, at least against righties. And if he gets platooned, then that's kind of the way the game's moving nowadays. But in OBP formats, a lot of people play them exclusively. Joshua Lowe should be able to continue that as he matures, and we'll just kind of have to see how it goes. But Matt, do you have more things on Joshua Lowe?
Yeah, he was a hard player to rank because he's one of the, I know this is a weird analogy, but he's one of the farthest players away from present day than what he can be.
Yeah,
so he's so tooled up. He's the epitome, like you said. I'm a bat speed whore. I am. And he has that. He has plus speed, plus arm, plus raw power, plus athleticism, and a strong plate approach. So why is he so? Why do I have him so far down this list? Because he's so raw. There was a little bit of actually debate, which is kind of crazy to think about it after I just listed off all those tools. There's a little bit of debate that he might actually be could have been drafted as a pitcher, believe it or not. He had in high school, he threw off the mound 90-94, touched 95, had an 82-83 mile an hour slider, curveball hybrid. With a changeup that had potential to be plus with plus command. So, like, he's a baseball player to the max, man. But the thing is, the issue with here, I know I'm going to sound hypocritical here with Guerrero being my number one guy, but proximity is an issue with Lowe. Being as tooled up as he is good, but there's a lot of variance. It's kind of like a farther away third base version, maybe third base version of Lewis Brinson, to be honest, when you look at the skill set. But there's a question mark if he could stick at third base. He might play the outfield. It's a lot of value baked into there. But initial reports on the defense weren't great. The plus arm allows him to play anywhere. He's probably a right fielder, but he's still a hell of a player, and he's definitely the type of player you should invest in dynasty formats. But he's a hard player to rate because the range of outcomes is literally anything.
Yeah, it's definitely a wide range of outcomes. Let's take a quick break, and we'll be right back.
It's that time again. That's right. It's fantasy baseball season, and the Fantasy Black Book is back and better than ever. This is Joe Pisapia, author of the 9-time best-selling Fantasy Black Book series, number one right now on Amazon, on iTunes, and for the first time ever, the Fantasy Baseball Black Book can be held in your hand. Yes, what a beautiful world we live in. Head over to Amazon and buy your hard copy as well today. Baseball is coming. Are you ready?
All right. And we're back. Hopefully you had a really nice break and got to listen to Justin talk about Survivor for a minute. Anyways, I had Ryan McMahon.
Outlast. I don't know the rest of it.
I honestly, I watched one season of Survivor, and it wasn't that I disliked the show. I just never really kept going with it. I don't, you know.
I didn't even know it was still on TV. But you should listen to Justin because he's great at it, so.
Yeah, I mean, listen to Justin because he's great at things. Anyways, so
Justin
five, I have
is
Ryan
the best.
Let's enough about Justin, damn it! I'm trying to get to my guy, Ryan McMahon, number five. Where do you guys have him on your list?
He's an honorable mention for me. Not too excited about him. I am much more excited about my number five, which is Tatis, a guy that you guys talked about a ton last year.
You mean last week?
Yeah, last week.
McMahon is six for me.
Okay.
So we can do it now.
All right, let's talk a little McMahon. So obviously, Andy, you are believing the struggles he had last year. And
yeah,
they're definitely warranted because he certainly took a step down. His contact has been dropping since he went into rookie ball. He had a 27% strikeout rate in rookie ball back in 2013. Then it dropped to 30%, 31%, and then last year it was a career low 35%. Strikeout rate, that's not going to play long term. He has hit for batting average his whole entire minor league career, 280 plus every year, 300 plus in two of those years, but then last year it kind of all fell off the table. He had a 242 batting average. What I do like is he has continued to walk, 10, 11, 9, 11% walk rates throughout his minor league stints. He stole a few more bases last year, but I don't think that that's part of his long-term profile. I do think he's going to steal a few bases, but I don't think he's a double-digit guy or anything like that. But the power dropped off in a big way. It was only 12 home runs last year and 466 at-bats. I don't have an explanation for that. I really don't. I think that the power is certainly that of a guy, especially in Coors Field, that could hit 30 or more home runs. But last year was his first exposure to Double-A. He did walk, and that's probably the only bright side of things that you can look at here, and the fact that he stole some bases. But at the end of the day, if he can't get those contact concerns in check, then we're looking at a guy that, A, might not make the major leagues, or B, just might be another Ben Paulson who gets a couple cups of coffee and then gets sent back down. Yeah, I mean, he definitely is more toolsier than somebody like Ben Paulson, absolutely. I mean, he can play better defensively. He probably will play first base, but this is a big year for him, because if he can show that he can make some adjustments, and that's honestly, that's what the game comes down to, is whether you can make adjustments or not. If he can make those adjustments, then we have a guy that might be, you know, might have a really high fantasy ceiling for us, which is why I think he is a mid-range guy here, because if it does work out, then it works out in a big way. But if it doesn't work out, then that's the type of guy that is unrosterable, unusable in any format, because he just can't ever get the bats to the ball. He can't use his best skill, which is the power.
Have him where on the list?
I have him at number 5.
Oh, wow. Okay. I don't see it. I think the best thing he's got for him is that he could have hit home runs at Coors Field, and now he won't do that.
Well, listen to Matt's story, because there was a very fun little nugget about McMahon last year, in particular the team he was playing for and what they had to do.
And this is why I'm not deleting him from my mind as a prospect guy. You get rid of guys all the time. You know what I mean, guys? But this is so interesting to me. My initial write-up, I did Colorado. They were one of the first teams I did. And I wrote, my first sentence was, McMahon was a top 100 guy at this time last season, and I don't think he will be for me anymore. I did my top 200 like a month after I wrote that. He checked in at number 97. So I couldn't quite quit him. I wanted to, but I couldn't. Like you said, the contact rate 30%. But the story you're referencing to, Mike, is he played for Double-A Hartford this year for Colorado in the Eastern League. Why does that matter? Well, they played every single game on the road because their home field was being built, and it's still not done yet. Can you imagine how grueling all these bus trips are for minor leaguers? Can you imagine doing that every single game? Like, every single game you play, you're riding the bus. It's impossible to get a routine. Baseball players are probably the biggest creatures of habit of any sport, I would imagine. Imagine taking the bus. That'll take a toll on anybody riding the bus that much. Secondly, every offensive park he's played to this point, which doesn't really help his case, every park has been offensive heavy. His benefit is Colorado Springs, his AAA ballpark in Albuquerque, and then in his Coors Field is obviously the offensive parks. If he has to play first, it's not because he's a bad third baseman. I think he can stick there defensively, but, I mean, he's got Nolan Arenado there. You're not moving Arenado.
He's okay.
So that's the thing. McMahon will not be a third baseman when he gets to the major leagues, which is unfortunate. But I don't know if the bat can clear the offensive bar at first base, because it's obviously higher. But just because of the home, I know he struggled in the AFL, but the AFL is also a hard thing to gauge, because that's after a long season. And McMahon's season probably feels twice as long because, again, riding the bus every single game. I think that's enough to give him some slack. Wouldn't you agree?
I just want to mention
I disagree.
absolutely, and that's completely fine. I get why people are down on McMahon, because it's certainly warranted. If you're down on him, I get it. I do want to just mention this, though, because Nolan Arenado has become a superstar, right? And it's apparent that he's going to be that way for probably the duration of his career. I want to just read off his minor league number, at least the Double-A numbers. He had, in 573 plate appearances in Double-A, 12 home runs, 55 RBIs. He had a great batting average because he never strikes out, and that's absolutely a skill that he has continued throughout his major league career as well. But that just goes to show you that somebody that hit 12 home runs in Double-A in his first year and 573 at-bats, that's just about what Ryan McMahon did last year, and obviously it doesn't trend that way once he gets to the major leagues. I mean, now Arenado is somebody that has made adjustments. He's an absolute star. I get it. You know, so I'm not trying to say that McMahon is going to be Arenado. But what I do want to say here is that just because somebody doesn't show prodigious power all the time doesn't mean they can't hit for insane power in the major leagues. Mind you, it all comes down to strikeout rate for McMahon. If he can improve it just up to the, you know, 28 to 30% range, somewhere in that region, then I think that you're looking at a guy that can certainly hit 30-plus home runs and cores, and I think that that's enough for me to buy him at fifth on this list just by itself.
Yep, no, nothing wrong with that. Everyone loves and respects what Keith Law does, one of the best prospect guys out there. Again, we're touting somebody else, but he actually left Nolan Arenado off of his top 100 list before the year before Arenado broke out. So, I mean, it just goes to show you that he was completely dead off people's radar.
Wait,
kind of like
Arenado had 10 home runs in 2013 in his rookie year. 10 home runs.
No. But the defense was outstanding, and then obviously he became what he is now. But I'm not faulting Keith Law for doing that. I'm trying to make a point that he's kind of off the radar like McMahon kind of is right now.
Yeah. I mean, this is a guy. Yeah. Arenado was a guy that didn't put up 200 ISO except for in A ball. And then in rookie ball, like that's pretty much it. You know, I mean, like he was somebody that really was not touted for his power. He was touted for his defense. The fact that he would be playing in cores. I know we're going off on a complete tangent here, but it's almost the complete opposite with McMahon. It's not that he is terrible defensively, but the contact is certainly opposing of that of Arenado's. And it really, if we can kind of find a happy medium there where the contact can kind of sway a little bit more towards the positive end, then the power is certainly going to play, especially in cores.
McMahon is the absolute perfect buy low candidate for fantasy leagues.
I agree. Because if you nobody lose better. On him, I think that you can trade, you know, right now, I think that you can trade a guy that's outside of the top 100, 150 prospects and get a guy like McMahon, and that's at least worth a shot.
Well, yep. I disagree, and I'm gonna point out two things. First, you were talking about Nolan Arenado. Nolan Arenado in the minor leagues, I mean, his lowest batting average in the minor leagues was .285.
Because his contact is so extreme. I mean, his contact rate in the minor leagues, that's...
Well, he wasn't copying them. He was just showing an example of how...
No. But what I'm trying to say is Nolan Arenado didn't have this sort of bad year that McMahon has. And you were talking, Matt, and you were talking about the fact that, oh, the kids have to move around so much. And yeah, I agree. We as fantasy baseball owners, we like to forget that these are people and think of their numbers. But here is another person, Ramil Tapia, who spent 104 games down there, and he had a monster year. So I think good players can play. Baseball's played on a diamond, and that is the same throughout everybody. So if a player like Tapia, who we all love, I'm sure he's high on all of our outfield lists, if he can do well and play well, move it around, I don't see why a consummate professional like other players who move around can do well too.
Yeah,
and McMahon,
I mean,
is, for me, he's just not one of them.
Tapia has a completely opposite profile as well, though. He's much closer to somebody like Arenado when he was in the minor leagues than McMahon. McMahon has a Joey Gallo profile, and you know, Tapia has much more of a high contact, less raw power profile. You know, more of a, you know, Ender Inciarte type guy that has much more projectable upside based on his tools. But I do agree with what you're saying, Andy, because if you're down on Arenado, if you're listening to this, you're down on it on Arenado, on McMahon, and you're like sitting here screaming at Matt and I, like, stop giving McMahon, you know, favors here. He had a shitty year, and he's always been bad at making contacts. I get it, you know, and I understand your point, Andy. I just think in fantasy, it's worth it to get to gamble on a few guys, and there's worse gambles to take than a guy that has raw plus power that's going to be playing in cores if it was to work out a bit.
The price is so cheap, you can't go wrong. Number five on my list is Lucas Irsay. Do you guys have him ranked? I'm assuming you do.
Where do you have him, Andy?
I have him ranked eighth.
I also have him ranked eighth. So we can go into Irsay a little bit here.
Yeah, obviously I'm the high man. He was flagged as one of my absolute favorite players doing my 2016 draft research. I love the profile. He went to Cal, had to transfer to Menlo College, had some off-the-field issues, didn't get kicked off the team or anything, but I think it was grades, and I think that he had to transfer out. That's just a guess. I'm not 100% sure on that. But here's a list of comps I've seen. Like, again, I'm not a big comp guy, but if you know how to use them in context, they're extremely valuable tools. Comps I've seen for Irsay: Josh Donaldson, Nolan Arenado, Matt Carpenter, which I think is my favorite one, and Chase Utley. The Carpenter one, I think, makes the most sense because obviously Ursic has a little bit of versatility. He's got the plus raw power, which Carpenter has shown to have in the last couple of years. And Ursic is a very good, very, the two strike approach is what Ursic is kind of, it's his trademark thing. And he's a really tough out. And that's similar to Carpenter. Ursic's line as in pro ball, 327, 376, 518, 17 doubles, 4 triples, 9 home runs. Again, kind of sounds like Carpenter, a lot of doubles. But the makeup concerns with the transferring, like from Cal, I'm not too big on that. Again, I'm willing to give people a couple shots until they keep doing it repeatedly. But nice left-hand hitter. Defensively, he's probably nothing more than average. But anytime you get a left-handed Josh Donaldson, Nolan Arenado name thrown around, I think that's crazy. I don't think his offensive season ceiling is that high. But you have to pay attention. So I'm going Ursig, and I'm sure you guys are not going to agree with any of that. But that's my opinion. So what do you guys think?
No,
I disagree. Andy, I think he's a pretty good defensive get. Actually, I think he was a closer in college, so he's got a great arm. I'd like to see. He's kind of strange because correct me if I'm wrong, but he's an older guy in the low system. So we'll have to see how that works out. And you guys were talking last week about how Milwaukee's
21.
Yeah, 21. Yeah. So Milwaukee's one of the best places to be for young kids. So I do like him a lot. He's number 8 behind Tatis and Reyes for me, for all of the reasons that you listed before, Matt. I think we might not – we're definitely not going to see him this year or next year. Yeah. I have him here as coming in 2018, 2019. Mm-hmm. But Baseball HQ, let's keep giving other people credit. They say under the radar, and I kind of agree.
Yeah, I'm going to be – full disclosure, I had Ursig at number 3 at one time on my list, and I ended up dropping – he ended up 8th, obviously, but there's definitely a case to be made that you can throw him high. You can throw him up here as – I mean, not number 3. I'm at number 4, sorry, ahead of Matt Chapman. So that's as high as I had him on my list. I think that there's certainly a case to be made that you can throw him there. The main thing is that he's going to play – if he makes it to the major leagues, he's going to play in Milwaukee. And Milwaukee is an absolute juggernaut for home runs. And, you know, it's borderline – it's not Coors, but it's borderline one of the best places to hit, if not the best place to hit in the major leagues behind Coors. And, you know, based on his skill set, I do think that batting average is going to be safe with him. He is advanced at the plate. There's certainly ways that he can improve it. But even if he stays with the same bat skills as he is now, I think that he's a floor for him is 260, maybe even higher at 270 or so, especially with where he's going to play. I think the raw power can project him out to anywhere between 20 and 30 home runs. I love the guy. So I think Ursig is somebody that you can buy right now very low and should be able to make the major league sometime in the next 2 years. Yes, he is 21, so he is a little bit more advanced for the age or for the ages of the players that he'll be playing against. But I do like what the future holds for somebody like Ursig. And you know, the name itself, Ursig, is great. Like, I love Ursig. It's just great to say. I can say that all the time and just feel like a little happy feeling in my stomach or something. But anyways, let's keep this moving a little bit. We're kind of going a little bit long, so. We already went through our number 5s. Number 6, does everybody go through the number 6s? Sorry, I had
Ryan McMahon. Ryan McMahon was my number 6.
We talked about him.
We talked about Tatis last year. For me, he's my number 6, so we can move on over.
Yeah, and I had Joshua Lowe at number 6. Number 7 for me is Austin Riley. Very close between Ursic and Riley.
Same-sies.
Who do you have at number 7? Or did you already say?
I actually have Reyes at number 7.
Omar Reyes. That's interesting.
Yes.
I have him as an honorable mention. So we'll talk about Austin Riley really fast. Where do you have him, by the way, Andy?
I have Riley at number 10.
Okay, so we can all kind of give a little shout-out to him. Matt, why do you have him at number 7?
20-year-old masher, 20 home runs, 39 doubles, which low A. I love the amount of doubles because obviously the doubles to me point to more power being there, and I think 30 home runs is within reach, 25-plus for sure. Bad news, 30% strikeout rate, but I feel like every prospect we talk about nowadays has a high strikeout rate. He might not be athletic enough to stay at third, might have to move to first in Atlanta. You're not going to be moving to first with Freddie Freeman there. To make a long story short, Riley is probably trade bait in Atlanta, but he's a young enough guy. Like I said, he's only 20 years old, and he's got a lot of power, and power is a big carrying tool. So youth and power and a good arm are the three are the best things for Riley.
Yeah, for fantasy, the power is where it's at. and the batting average, I think, is a little inflated for what you'll actually get. But there's still a ton of time for him to make adjustments, and that's what I'm looking for with Riley. There's certainly a case to be made to have Urseg in front of Riley. I just right now have Riley a tad bit ahead, but I have no problem with somebody. Like I said, I mean, if you wanted to throw Urseg up there at number four, I wouldn't hate you for it, and I certainly would be behind you, actually. But at least for right now, I think Riley is the type of guy that this will be a big year for him. He went up two levels in 2015 as a rookie, and then they threw him an A-ball last year for the full season. I'm assuming he's going to go to high A, and if he gets promoted to double A because he's making good adjustments in the strikeout department, then that's a really positive sign. Obviously, they have a ton of guys in the Braves system, so we can't necessarily count on Riley being there for the duration of his career. Can't really count anybody being somewhere one place for their whole career, but at least for the next 5 to 10 years or 5 to 6 years or so, I think that Riley definitely could be trade bait, but I do love the power, and I think that it still could mature even more. Is he a switch hitter? Mind you, I didn't write that down on my
notes. No, he's not. He's not.
Right-handed.
Right-handed only? Okay. For some reason, I had it in my back of my mind that he might be a switch hitter, but regardless, he hit 20 bombs last year. The contact's a problem. He should be able to maintain a solid walk rate. It's pretty simple. Let's move on to let's talk Tatis really fast, Matt. Where would you have Tatis on this list if we were going to throw him at third base?
Probably right. Well, I did rank him in my top two. Pull it up really quick. I believe he would have been seventh, but let me double check that. Where would you have him, Mike?
I would actually have him right behind McMahon and right in front of Joshua Lowe. So I would have him at six.
Okay. Yeah. No, I'm trying to find him right now on my list. He was toward 100, around the 100 range. Didn't make the 100 top 100 for me, but just outside. He was at 117, right in front of Bobby Dalbec, who I'm sure we'll talk about here in a minute. So
I would put him somewhere in the vicinity of
trying. He'd be right after Austin Riley. He'd be.
Well, you had Ryan McMahon at what, five? So
McMahon is six. Austin Riley was seven.
Okay,
so and you got him right there. Tatis would be eight for me.
Okay, just to give a little bit of context there. All right, let's keep the list moving, if I can keep up with it at all. Who's our number eight?
Bobby Dalbec for me.
I had Urseg at eight. So okay. Go ahead, talk about Dalbec.
And I also had Urseg. So I want to talk about, before we start going off the rails even more, let's talk about Omar Reyes really fast before we kind of go. I have him as an honorable mention. Where do you have him at?
I hate Omar
really?
Reyes. Yeah. For his power, and that is supposed to be he's got all this potential as being a big power hitter. He's hit 19 career home runs in 268 games. Yes, he's been young for the levels, but he doesn't offer any other skills, doesn't walk, no speed, defense is iffy, might have to move to first base, and I just do not see it. At a certain point in time, it becomes production. You have to give me some sort of production. I mean, I have an imagination. I can see, I can get an idea of what projection is, but the numbers I'm looking at, yes, obviously don't discount the numbers, but I just don't see with Reyes. He didn't even make my top 200. That's how down I am on Jomar. But good ballpark potentially in Baltimore, but I mean, it's years away. He's 20 years old. He should be in double A next year, and he's going to get eaten alive, I think.
Wow, you are so down on him. I have him as an honorable mention, but I think that there's really not a lot of differences other than defensively between him and Matt Chapman, to be honest. I mean, I understand that he hasn't produced like Chapman in terms of the bombs yet, but he certainly has the body for it, and by all accounts, he has the raw power for it as well. He's already built. He's 6'3", 220. You know, I think you're being a little harsh. So I don't have him in my top 10, so I'm not sitting here giving glowing reports about Reyes, but I love the long-term ballpark if he does make the major leagues, and Camden Yards is an amazing place to hit. And he certainly has a profile that would, you know, certainly be consistent with that of a power guy if things get a little bit better there. Andy, any thoughts on Omar Reyes or Jomar Reyes, however you want to say it?
Well, Matt's completely right. You know, it's such a shame that this list has been full of great third basemen behind amazing MVP-caliber third basemen. So, Jomar, or Jormar, however you want to say it.
Oh, that's not the way we should say it right there, the way you said it.
Yeah, I can't do that, so I'm going to have to give it to him every time.
Rolling R's is not Matt and I's forte. Exorande.
No.
Yeah. Your forte.
Forte.
But I will say this, though. You guys were talking about buy low candidates. I would much rather go out and trade for Hormar instead of McMahon or Chapman.
Hmm. Yuck.
Yeah, I disagree there. But all right, let's move on. All right, so let's go to Bobby Dalbec. Where do you have Bobby Dalbec, Mr. Andy?
So I have him as an honorable mention, really.
I also have him as an honorable mention. So, Matt, why are you so high on the Boston Red Sox? Damn it.
Monster sophomore season at University of Arizona as a third baseman and closer.
Nobody cares about University of Arizona.
But then he kind of, his junior season, he was inconsistent because they lost a lot of graduations his sophomore year. They were in the College World Series. Junior year, he was riding on batting in the middle of the order. That didn't take very well. Play skills kind of fell apart. Plus raw power, an absolute cannon, hence the former closer. 674 line and low A, yeah, small sample size and everything. Long swing, strikeouts are always going to be part of it. Defense should be really, really good. Sneaky add for me in dynasty formats because he's not getting talked about, and I put a Troy Glaus comp on him as best case scenario. He's not going to reach it, but if he hit 40 home runs one season, I would not be totally surprised. The power is that good. So Bobby Dalbec for me, buddy.
Troy Glaus had like multiple 40 home run seasons.
Yeah, I made that clear. I said I don't think he's going to do it consistently. I would be shocked if he did it once, you know, because he's got that type of power. And Fenway Park is a pretty good place to hit when you hit a lot of fly balls like Dalbec does.
Good. So what you're advocating to our listeners is to get him for 1 year and then get rid of him.
You just got to know which year.
So. Yeah. Yeah. Well, stay tuned. Matt, follow Matt Thompson to Twitter to find out which year Bobby Dalbec hits 40 home runs.
Yeah, I have him as an honorable mention. I need to see a lot more this year. I think that there is plenty of tools there for a lot of power output. I don't have a good basis on his batting average quite yet because, you know, even if you look at his 386 line last year, 386, 426, 674, like you mentioned, Matt, that came with
walks.
You know, I came with a 6% walk rate and a 75% contact rate. So I don't like to say BABIP and fueled a lot, but that was certainly something that looks like it was a little bit favorable in the BABIP department. But 7 bombs in that 132 at-bats, that's certainly something I like to see. I think that this will be a big year. I mean, he's already, you know, 21 years old. You know, he needs to be a fast riser. So if he is kind of plateauing and not really improving in terms of his stats and the reports that you're seeing on him aren't improving either, then I think that he's going to be a guy that you just kind of throw away. But if he does make a rapid progression through the minors, then he's certainly somebody to keep your eye on.
I like how – I'm going to kind of go on a little tangent here in a second. I like how you mentioned the age 21 and Ursig is 21. They're both kind of toward the back end of all of our lists here. Vladimir Guerrero Jr. is only 17. He's going to be in the major leagues before these guys – like these guys are 20 or 21 years old. He's going to be in the major leagues at 20. That's the extra value a guy like Guerrero has. So just to throw that out there.
Yeah, it's insane. I don't know what the average lifespan of an MLB player's career is, but – you know, if you're starting it at 20 or 21.
Yeah, it's plausible it's 17, 18-year career if you're that good. Yeah.
So, I mean, obviously Guerrero's upside is that of a, you know, top 5, top 10 prospect, or not prospect, that of a top 5, top 10 MLB fantasy asset that we could be drafting in the first round for years. But let's keep this moving. We have number 9. Who is everybody's number 9, if you didn't mention already?
Josh Lowe. Oh, you said Josh Lowe. I'm waiting for you guys to give me shit on this one, because this is where my list got sad. I'm gonna put sad Colin Moron at number 9.
Oh God, get out of here! Get out!
Yeah, bro. I know. I hate it too, but
I don't even want to talk about him. So,
honestly, you can just talk about him, Andy.
Well, let's just say that he played in the majors last year. I hope he gets traded. I really like him. I think he can hit. For good average, and in a day where you were talking about before, where everyone's striking out so much, I think he'll get traded somewhere, and he'll play third base somewhere. So, in auction leagues, you can get him at a buck, and hopefully, he'll be good. I like him, but
I'd rather light my dollar on fire.
Yeah. Did you say light your dog
Did you
on
say
fire?
Dollar.
Yeah, I was like,
dollar,
is that like a ritual?
I don't know what's worse. Actually, I really don't.
Yeah,
I don't. Know
what's more American. So I probably, of my 3 fans, I probably just lost 2 of them. But I don't I don't like it at nine, but he's just because of the proximity alone, he's at number nine for me.
What did he even do last year? Let's look at what he did. So in 2016 in Fresno, 10 home runs, three stolen bases, 259, 328.
Career high 10 runs in the PCL, so I'm out.
Yeah, I honestly wasn't even on him, so that's why I'm kind of looking him up right now and just to kind of see what
like,
he did.
He's like seventh on the depth chart for the Astros, and he's in AAA already. So
listen, okay. I prefaced it by saying that I was going to get shit for
you
it.
Did. I just don't see the ceiling. You called it. No, I'm just fucking with you. But I don't see. I think this sounds weird, but I think 5 years ago, I think he comes up to the majors quicker, only because there's, like you said, there's not much of an emphasis. He's a different kind of player now, and I don't think the power at third base is going to be enough for him. Is there any off the top of your head? How many teams in the major leagues have a third baseman that's going to hit 8 to 10 home runs?
Oh man, it's bad if they do. I don't really.
Yeah, maybe the Angels, maybe Yunel Escobar, maybe. I think he even hits more than that. Not a lot. I just don't know. The glove's not good enough for second. I know they kind of messed around with that. I know he did at North Carolina. I'm not sure if he did.
His arm's too good for second though. Like he needs to stay at third because that's where you can utilize his borderline his best tool.
But then, honestly, at second base, he's an acceptable offensive player, but not a third.
But he's not quick, though. Like, he's not a guy that you can really see. You know, I think that what we need to do as a trio is we need to come up with a really good, like, catchphrase for when a prospect is done and then maybe make, like, a little sound drop to it. And, like, that's maybe, like, ring some type of, like, dump alarm or, like, RIP something like that so that we can just,
we can call it pulling a Bubba Starling.
Something like that, yeah. You know, something in that area. And, you know, if we were going to have the, you know, inauguration of that, I think it would be Colin Moran. So
the first annual Starling Award goes to Colin Moran.
We had a mock funeral for Andy last week. So I think today's is Colin Moran.
This is going to take some work, guys. I know the listeners are like,
dude, look, I brought him up a good. It was a good conversation we had.
Who do you guys got at number 10?
No, hold on. Who do you have at number nine, Matt?
Josh Lowe.
All right, so I have Cabrian Hayes at number nine.
Oh, okay. And honorable mention to me.
Yeah, so what I really like about Hayes is that he's got a really, really strong frame. He definitely has a lot of strong power upside as well. I don't like that he's going to be playing in Pittsburgh if and when he gets, you know, gets promoted to that area, but he's only 20 years old. I think that he's going to make a rise through the minors up to AA this year. I think that his contact and walk rate, which I always look at all the time, you know, back in at the beginning of 2016 in rookie ball, he had a 17% walk rate and 80% contact rate, very limited sample size. Then he had close to 80% contact rate and 6% walk rate and 247 at-bats in A-ball. I think that that will continue. I always look at plate skills first. Second is plus raw power. If that kind of continues, then you're looking at a career trajectory that could yield us a guy that has 25-plus bombs with a pretty solid batting average as well. I like a lot about him. So the frame is already there. I think that we just need to see him progress offensively. I think the plate skills will remain consistent, but I'm more looking for the raw power to kind of come to fruition in actual stats rather than just kind of seeing it on your reports and such.
You're a little more bullish than me on the power, but I do like Hayes. I think everything you said, I think the frame is good. I don't know if the swing is conducive to power because he doesn't get a lot of loft, but I mean, you got to bump up guys. I bump up guys a little bit for the major league pedigree. Obviously his dad was a major league player for a long time. Charlie Hayes. But Cabrian is an interesting guy. He's honorable mention for me. I just, long story short, I don't trust the power output.
You shut your mouth. All right, number 10. Andy, who do you have at number 10?
I have Riley at 10.
Austin Riley.
So we already spoke about him. That's fine.
I apologize again, listeners, for asking every time because it's already hard enough to keep up with my own list, let alone two others. So
that's okay. And when I have Colin Moran on my list, it really disqualifies me.
When I can't count the other guys that are on the show, it's probably going to be hard for me to count all of the lists at once. Who do you have at number 10, Matt?
Heimer Candelario.
I had him as, I guess, an honorable mention because I didn't know if Ryan McMahon was going to be allowed or not. But I have Miguel Andujar at number 10.
I like that guy. It's honorable mention again.
It's another guy that I've been watching a lot of this spring, actually, and that's more because the MLB streaming app has allowed me to watch the Yankees probably more than any other team.
The Yes Network, man.
Yeah, so, and I just want to say on a side note, we're going to get to the outfield preview, but Clint Frazier is just... He's the most fun player to watch. He really is. Like, I rarely like to go on Twitter while I'm watching minor league players and say, like, oh, this guy's doing this or this guy's looking like this or whatever. But with Frazier, just watching him throughout a game is just one of the most fun things. I'm going to make it a tradition that I just watch him all the time. Even though he's playing for a rival team in the Yankees, like, Frazier is just the man. I love him to death. And even just besides a statistical, you know, output or outlook on him, I just think that watching him is, so it's kind of like Josh Donaldson. It's fun to watch Josh Donaldson play. It's going to be really fun to watch somebody like Clint Frazier play. But in terms of Andujar, he's hitting for really good power this spring. He definitely has the frame for it. It's 6'1", 175 right now. I think he's a little bit bigger now since the spring has started. The contact rate is what I really love. He doesn't strike out a ton. Last year in 2016 in high A Tampa and double A Trenton, he had an 87% and an 85% contact rate. That's really strong. You also have walk rates that don't kill you. They aren't awesome, but they're definitely walk rates that you can live with, 7% in each stop. I think that he's a 280-plus hitter, and I think that the home runs should get in between 15 and 20 as he matures as well. I don't think he'll make the majors this year, but he's having a great spring against some really decent pitching as well, and I think that he's really, really best suited for the back end of this list, because if it does work out, you're going to look at a guy that hits for strong batting average, has some decent power, and probably doesn't cost you anything right now because nobody's really looking at him as the, you know, a guy to buy or anything like that. He could also steal a couple bases as well, but I think Andujar is pretty interesting.
Yeah, I back up everything you said, and a little factoid about Andujar, he probably has the strongest arm of any third baseman in the minor leagues, which is interesting enough. I like the defensive stuff, but everything you said is great. I think he's definitely a guy you can get for nothing. The 26 doubles last year with the 12 home runs and a strong – the contact rate, I'm glad you brought that up, is insane, especially for a guy with this kind of 20-homer potential when he gets filled out and learns how to use his body and get some leverage in his swing. So I like Andujar a lot. He made my honorable mentions list.
All right, so let's go to the rest of our honorable mentions. I will go with you, Andy. Just kind of list off your guys, and we'll kind of try and do it that way. Andy, are you there? Andy, stop.
You took another train selfie?
God, yeah, press mute. Press off mute, maybe.
Andy. Well, my honorable mentions list since. Andy is speechless. There's a couple guys that are kind of far away. Colton Welker, Colorado Rockies system. Vladimir Galindo for the Cubs system. Obviously, the aforementioned Ke'Bryan Hayes and Miguel Andujar, whatever one it is. Also, another guy I added on this list is Hunter Dozier for the Royals. I think he probably breaks in and gets some time this year. He was up last year, did pretty well. In limited time, so that's my honorable mentions list. A couple other guys I can go into: Nolan Jones, I think he's going to end up at third, being good. Kevin Padlo over the Rays. Michael Chavis is a nice power hitter for the Red Sox. Joe Rizzo for the Mariners is a hit tool over anything first. And another deep sleep draft, another Brewer third baseman, Chad McClanahan, because it's a fun name to say. So. I imagine he has red hair. I've never seen him, but I hope he has red hair with the name McClanahan.
All right, so going through my list of honorable mentions, I had Heimer Candelario already on there. I also had Jomar Reyes. Andy obviously says it the best. Bobby Dalbec was also on there. Colton Welker, we are alike in that respect. And we're also alike in Hunter Dozier. And I think that he's really sneaky right now in Keeper Dynasty formats because you can get him for absolutely free. He made big strides in terms of his batting average, his contact profile, his power overall last year that obviously earned him a promotion. I don't think that everything is completely out the window for somebody like Dozier. He's dealt with a lot of different things throughout his minor league career, including injuries at times. Just it's been a long road, but he's 25. He's ready to make a major league impact. I think that he could, you know, make the opening day club. He probably won't, but there's certainly a scenario in my mind where we could see somebody like Dozier make at least, you know, or at least have the opportunity to get 200 plus at bats, maybe 300 if things were to work out. So, Andy, what's the rest of your honorable mentions? Thank you for joining us again.
Sorry. I guess my mic cut out there for a second. So I have Miguel Andujar up there too. And just to go back to what you were saying about Clint Frazier and the Yankees looking so good, I have been waiting for this for a long time.
Oh, shut up, you Yankee fan. How many World Series do you have?
but it's not about how many World Series do we have. It's when did we win the last one? And that was, you know.
Yeah, no, you're right.
Yeah, long time. How are the sons of borderline the best owner ever? It's probably not even arguable at this point. He is the best owner ever. How are the Steinbrenners going to not ruin the Yankees anymore? You want to know the answer to that? By signing Bryce Harper.
Well, let's hope.
And Manny Machado.
Yeah. I mean, they were saying that there was an article saying that Bryce Harper and Machado could be $1 billion right there. And I would so happily spend that money.
You know, George is sitting on his grave like, damn it. What are we doing right now? Why are we signing DJ Gregorius? Why aren't we using our assets and just buying all of these guys? I know he's going nuts. Anyways, go ahead, Andy.
Well, so I had Andujar, Chapman, and Dozier as well on my honorable mentions.
Nice. I think that's going to wrap us up. You know, we went a long time on third base. All in all, pretty solid list up top, and then you have a lot of wild cards at the end here, kind of towards the middle all the way to the end. But, Andy, let everybody know where they can reach you once again, what you're kind of working on nowadays, and, where everybody can find you.
A. Anderson, FWFB on Twitter. Please ask me questions. I was surprised when I had someone reach out. I will answer all of your questions. I'll answer them wrong and terribly, but that's what I will do. I have a league that I'm running that's getting heated up again. And then I have my big league, Gotham, with big names such as Rob Leibowitz and Seth Trackman in, which I'm excited for. I've never won it, but this looks like the year. It could be this year because I've got Mookie Betts and Bregman for very little amount of money. So I'm excited about that.
I would be too. If you would like a question answered on the show, you are welcome to tweet at any of us and just say, hey, but don't answer it now. Could you please answer it on the show? We'll review it and everything, and we'll be happy to answer it for you. We haven't got any listener questions that at least have been asked to go on air yet. But if you want it particularly on air, then we have no problems doing that at all. We would love to be interactive. So definitely shoot that to any of us. Matt, where can you be reached, and what are you working on?
I can be reached on Twitter, MDTompFWFB, and just a weird moment right now. I'm watching the MLB Network, right? Braves and Yankees spring Garcia pitching to Matt Halliday, and they're two lifelong Cardinals for me. So, well, Halliday not obviously, but both been Cardinals for a long time. Playing against each other is weird, but I'm gonna keep updating the prospect list. Obviously, the prospect pod. Join us on the Monday show. The season previews are great. Outfielders are next for us. I believe we're going to chop those into two shows.
Yes, we are, because it's too much.
Too much to do. Can't leave that many guys off the list. We're going to talk about 20 outfielders each, and we're still going to be leaving guys off.
Yeah,
but like I said,
our mentions list is going to be like 50 long.
It's draft season, so if you have any questions about anybody, please, yeah, shoot us up on Twitter. If we haven't got to the guy, we'll gladly answer it. Even if we did, we'll answer it again. So, yeah, thanks.
I have a question for you, Matt. How high are you on Ronald Acuna? Actually, don't answer that because we want to wait until next week. But if you haven't read Matt's top 200 list, then you can see just how high he really is on Ronald Acuna.
You should do it. I worked hard on that. I think it's pretty good.
Anyways, you can reach me on Twitter, at Mike Werner, FWFB. Please feel free, again, to ask questions. We are more than happy to oblige there. You can check out my daily matchups column, kind of like a DFS column for Baseball HQ this season. It should be ramping up as soon as the regular season starts. Check out the main show on Monday with Matt and myself. We have a lot of great guests there. We will be having guests on this show as well. We haven't done that yet, but we will be having some guests. We're also going to be kind of turning over to more of a Keeper Dynasty type deal once we get through the top 10 lists and everything until we get some relevant minor league information and stuff in. But yeah, definitely check out the site, friendswithfantasybenefits.com. Please rate and review the show as usual. It really has been helping us out. We continue to get the best listenership we've ever had, and we continue to get a lot of really good feedback, especially on this show as well. So if there's something that you would like for us to do, we are happy to listen, and we definitely want to make this as enjoyable as possible for you. Like Matt said, we're going to go through some outfielders next week. But, yeah, for Matt, Andy, and myself, thank you for listening, and good luck in your drafts.